So we're good to go, David?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, everyone. Good afternoon. My name is Richard. I'm one of the co-chairs along with Derek Mapp. I'll be co-chairing this meeting today. So I'd like to call the meeting to order. So let's begin with introductions. I can start with myself. Like I said, I'm Richard Sullivan, full council member and co-chair of the community engagement meeting here along with Derek Mapp. And I'll pass it along to Derek.
Hi, I'm Derek, and I am a council member and co-chair. And
Lee? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Lee?
Hi, Lee Jewell, council member.
Kara.
Hi, everyone. Kara, council staff.
David?
David Jordan, council staff.
David?
Steven Spen, a member of the public, HCAP staff attorney at ALRP.
Hi, Beth.
Beth Neary, HIV Health Services.
Ben?
Mayor Ben, council member.
Melina.
Hi, everyone. Melina Clark, council staff.
I believe last, but definitely not least, Kevin.
Oh, hi, everyone. Kevin Hutchcroft, HHS.
Okay, so I think that's introductions and welcomes. So thanks, everyone. So let's review today's agenda. Would anyone like to make any amendments to the agenda? So any opposition to approving the agenda as written? Okay, so seeing none, the agenda is approved. So we've approved today's agenda. Let's take a look at the minutes from last month, if we could. Okay, would last month's minutes. Would anyone like to make any amendments to last month's minutes? Anyone see anything? Is there any opposition to approving the minutes as written?
There's one typo that's underlined in red.
Yep. Because Valerie left right before this meeting was scheduled, I did the minutes for this meeting and while also engaging pretty heavily in this meeting. So forgive me if they are sparse. I just kind of threw them together. I can fix the one typo easily. Are there any sort of, am I missing any important sort of elements of important elements that were included in this conversation? I think that the HCAP piece was probably the most important part that we discussed last week or last month.
Okay. Barring that, can we approve last month's draft minutes? Any objections? Okay. So we'll move on to announcements. Does anyone have any announcements?
As Dave alluded to, I'm kind of cramming my whole week into 2 days this week. So I'm going to have to take off after I provide an update to and comment on my report.
Hey, this is Lee. I also need to leave at 3:55. I have a client at 4:00. We usually finish up within an hour anyway. So, but thank you.
Stephen and Lee, thank you. Are there any other announcements? Any public comments? No. So, all right, Stephen, I believe it's time for HCAP report. Would you take it away, please?
Certainly. So I guess I'll just provide a quick update. I did attend the steering committee meeting. At that meeting, I was asked to support in drafting a letter that might be adopted by the council, and I'm still working on that letter, so I apologize. But there has been actually in the last couple of weeks a lot of movement on this since our last meeting. I've attended multiple grievance meetings at this point. I think 6 or 7 of the grievances that I've filed have been addressed in a meeting. And then we've walked away with some good action points to get folks a little bit more supported. In addition, Bill Hirsch, our executive director, has been you know, advocating very strongly with the mayor's office and the other city, our other city partners, to make sure that this is addressed from a citywide perspective and not just placed on the desk of one service provider or one department of the city. So there has been a kind of a robust response to the issue. And I'm really grateful for this committee because I think that's in big part due to the actions and kind of the listening that has been done at this in this space. So I'm just very, I want to express my gratitude in that regard. There are some updates, you know, with regard to each individual client. Several people have been offered placements that are, you know, not ideal, but certainly, you know, better than homelessness, and in some regards, actually very quite appropriate placements. For those folks who are being geared or who have at least been identified as being capable of moving independently, we're really trying to focus our efforts on finding out three major things, which are: one, when are people moving? Two, what is the status of their subsidy? What type of subsidy are they getting? And also, what supports are going to be offered? So in some of, like, you know, there are, you know, it has become very clear to me at this point that the strongest advocates for our clients are going to be their primary medical care providers. And that's something that is, I think, within the DPH or within the council's purview to kind of encourage care providers, medical care providers, to support their clients on a very client-centric level. You know, some of the assessment tools that were given to folks were unclear. And I heard from some of the service providers in the medical community, you know, within the purview of HHS, that they didn't feel like their voices were really carried any weight throughout the process. It's becoming clear to me that it does, that they do need to voice that, whether they feel that or not. I'm happy to support in that regard. So I'm reaching out to those folks individually on behalf of the clients that I, at least that I'm supporting. But we have to also recognize that, you know, maybe I have 9 clients listed here, but there must be others who have not reached out to HCAP or have not reached out to AORP. And if that's true, I certainly want the medical care providers to know that their voice does count, that they really do need to advocate on behalf of their clients in order to make sure that they get appropriate placements, whether it's going to be remaining at an RCFCI level of care or moving down to a transitional care facility where they can stay for at least a couple of years while they transitioned into more independent housing, and that will be supported by the community if they have the appropriate documentation to support that assessment. So that's kind of a broad overview. You know, rather than kind of focus on the challenges, I feel like we've done a lot of that. I do want to focus, you know, at least, you know, there is at least one client who has been repositioned to a, you know, to a new location within the, you know, within the system of care. That's also going to, it's a supportive housing facility. Their subsidy will remain the same. It'll be 30% of their income. And you know, they'll remain, you know, so they'll still obtain some support services. So that's at least one success. It's not a finalized thing yet, but we're well on the way toward finalizing it. And I also have heard that there are a couple of beds available at a rather desirable placement for a transitional care facility. So if you hear of any folks that I'm not already representing that do need some support in moving to a transitional care facility, please let me know and I'm happy to advocate on their behalf. I have a feeling those beds are going to go really quickly. But just to share kind of where some of the hitches occur, you know, right now there's 4 empty units at that space. And they're still sitting empty because the housing authority hasn't completed the inspections that need to get completed in order to approve people moving in. So the hitch in a lot of ways is coming from some kind of interdepartmental communication on the city's part. And I'm hoping that, you know, our government partners can do what they can to loop everybody in and move things along. So I'm just advocating along those lines to the extent that anybody can support on that way. I also, I guess it's worth noting, it's not, I know that it's been an issue, a trend in the past, you know, just because this, the housing, that these housing cases have kind of taken over the real estate on my report, in the last couple of months. But that being said, I still have, you know, other clients and other clients with other issues. There have been a couple of dental issues that have popped up and a new one that came across my desk for which I have not done an intake yet. You know, working to get clients are, you know, we're still working to get clients connected to you know, those services, dental services. And I can say that it's it has been a challenge with regard to COVID, especially in those settings. For the most part, they tend to be student models or student care models. And I think that poses some particular challenges to getting clients in the door. You know, at least one report that I've heard of today in a grievance hearing that I attended was that, you know, the Delta variant is actually throwing a wrench in the gears for them to have students come back to school and actually attend the clinic because they have done some contract tracing that and a lot of students haven't passed muster to be able to come back to the clinic yet. So still experiencing some problems along those lines within the system of care. And I'm just hoping to get folks reconnected as quickly as possible. And with that, I'll just open up to questions and see if I can address any specific concerns.
Anyone have anything for Stephen?
No questions, but just thank you for your work, Stephen. I know your work is really valuable and important for clients.
That's great to hear. I appreciate the support of the council and this committee in particular. I really do appreciate it.
So Stephen, just quickly from what I'm hearing, this was a pretty hot button item the last couple of meetings. Things have slowed down a little and there's a little more of a handle on this. Is that what this is sounding like?
Well, I can't say that. Yeah. So what I can say is, for lack of a better term, it seems like everybody's kind of slowed their roll a little bit. There was some, you know, a lot of folks went into crisis very righteously. And I think it's easy to say like, oh, well, people were okay with it before, but now there's a lot of anxiety now that it's upon us. And I think a lot of that could have been expected. We could have expected that when we, you know, mess with people's housing on this level and on a system-wide level, we could have expected folks' behaviors to show up. We could have anticipated that a little bit more and maybe been a little bit more tender around it, you know, system-wide. I'm not saying it's any, and I agree with Bill, you know, whose mantra has been, this is not an issue for the service providers. It's not an issue for DPH. It's not an issue for mayor's office housing. This is a system-wide issue. It's a citywide issue. And a lack of coordination is going to be what causes the, you know, any of these problems. And that appears to be what's happened. That being said, I think my advocacy efforts, the efforts of this council, the vocal nature of me and Bill have kind of voiced a lot, you know, and the grievance process, working through the grievance process has been effective in at least slowing folks down and highlighting where some of the deficiencies were. So now at this point, we're kind of backtracking and going back and saying, okay, well, you know, I was able to actually go into meetings where I would talk about the assessment process and highlight for some of the folks that were higher up within the service providers organization for them to see like, okay, the assessment process didn't go according to plan. It wasn't as client-centric as we intended it to be or as they were promised it would be. It was more or less placed, you know, a decision was made and then it was put on the client to kind of self-advocate, which is unfair in a lot of regards for people who have been institutionalized for as long as they have. And so, you know, yes, to answer your question, it appears things have slowed down. That being said, it is still upon us. It is imminent. The train has left the station. Folks are going to need to move. The contracts have ended or they're going to end at my understanding is at September 30th. The facilities that are slated to be licensed will be de-licensed. In fact, one of them has already been de-licensed as of July 1st. So, you know, that one is not too problematic because it has a very discrete purpose and they have plenty of beds and they have a smaller level. Well, I suppose I Well, I'm reticent to talk about it to talk about these facilities by name in this forum, but the Mayor's Office of Housing has been incredibly communicative, and it's all public information. So I'll leave it to, you know, if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them, like, you know, privately, but maybe I shouldn't do it on a recorded call. And, you know, and so, but, you know, it's an imminent process. It's going to happen, and it's going to require that the city or whatever response happens in an expeditious way. I think Bill is doing a really good job offering support in trying to advocate toward the boards of supervisors. I think, you know, working through this grievance process has helped slow it down from a service provider's perspective, and the clients know who they can contact for support. It's me. And, you know, and I'm happy to reach out to their medical care providers to coordinate care in that regard. I don't know that it has technically slowed down, but it feels a little bit more chill, to answer your question, Richard. I hope that answers the question. That July 1st timeline is really what threw people off. When people were told they needed to move on July 1st, on June 24th, a lot of folks went into crisis. And that was a miscommunication on the part of a number of people, and a lack of coordination on some folks' part that I think we've kind of remedied. And, you know, I think it was a learning experience for a lot of people.
Thanks for your work on this, Stephen. Anyone have anything else?
I just want to say, this is Derek. I just want to say, like, I look forward to hearing your report back as we get closer to the date that the September date. And hopefully there will be, if not everything resolved, almost everything resolved. And whatever thing is left over, how we can continue to support you.
I appreciate
your work.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing these on the closed page of my report. Hopefully with good resolve. But.
Yes.
Thank you, Stephen.
All right.
In the interim, I've noticed that Nay Nascimento and Mark Molnar have joined on. Would you guys like to introduce yourself or any announcements?
Mark Molnar, council staff.
Nay Nascimento, council member.
Welcome. So it looks like now we would move on to our needs assessment update and COLA targets, that section.
Yep. So I will quickly update you guys on our process, our progress around COLAs and needs assessment. They're pretty moving on at the same pace right now. We've begun our outreach and are beginning sort of some collaborations with service providers and looking to get referrals. So we're sort of up and running as far as that goes. We have purchased our gift cards. And one thing I would ask is that if anybody has any suggestions or good contacts at service providers that we have maybe historically not accessed, I would love to hear from you, whether it's here or offline, because of the needs assessment, because of the sort of broad nature of our target, we can kind of be inclusive of a lot of different populations here. And so I'd love to sort of maybe go a little farther afield, especially since we are having to do this remotely. It definitely makes things a little more challenging. And I mean, those of you who have been here for a few years know how challenging it is to get people motivated to refer their clients to us sometimes. When it's me showing up in a drop-in basis, saying, I got $25 for anyone who wants to talk to me, clients are coming out of the woodwork. But in a situation where I have to really rely on service providers to do a little bit of vetting and connect me individually with clients to get them the survey online, confirm that they, you know, email back and forth, make sure they get the survey back in, get them their gift cards and everything in between. I think they're a little less less interested in taking on the additional burden of that in some ways. And you know, as we know, they're all, everybody's got a caseload, a bigger caseload than they'd like. And any good direct service provider is going to be primarily focused on the needs of their clients and not on the needs of me trying to get, or you guys trying to get information from their clients. So that said, any input you have on as far as that goes would be great. We are reaching out to some people at Southeast Clinic. We're reaching out to people at the AIDS Foundation, although the AIDS Foundation is vast. So if you have other contacts, I'm happy to hear them. We are reaching out, of course, through Shanti and through Lutheran Social Services. Primarily, that's going to be focused on our COLA because of their connection with housing, the sort of housing navigation and that kind of thing. I feel like I'm missing one that I've, Larkin is sort of our go-to youth agency. So either now or later, happy to hear your input on service providers that might be willing to help us out.
Dave, I'm just wondering if you're sending out a kind of a request to the full board or the full council to get, you know, some additional feedback that might be helpful.
I could. I'm trying to imagine what exactly that looks like. A consistent issue in for all of our needs assessment efforts is a walking the line between being as inclusive as possible and doing as much sort of broad outreach as possible while also maintaining a certain amount of specificity. Because if we don't do any vetting on the front end of how we do our recruitment, individual staff, meaning mostly me, end up doing a ton of vetting on the back end when we get lots and lots of referrals that are not applicable for what we're doing. And so that's why we generally don't go with things like flyers or palm cards, because what they net us less actual good, useful information and a lot more emails and phone calls that don't go anywhere. So I hear that. And I think that, yes, maybe a carefully worded appeal to the rest of the council to maybe help us out with some outreach. I mean, especially those members who are members of the community and consumer services and those who are service providers who actually have direct contact with clients. So I agree. It's probably worth doing. Just I have to figure out exactly what that email looks like.
I've lost my way over the last couple of meetings. What exactly is like the title or the search group for the need? What is the needs assessment?
So the population that we're focusing on this year with the needs assessment is, and it's a little bit amorphous, but it is essentially anyone who is engaged in almost any HIV positive consumer of Ryan White services, but primarily those who have engaged in telehealth or any sort of like safe distance service apparatus, anything to sort of safe distance engagement in the care continuum, with a specific, additionally, a specific focus on things like isolation and mental health, mental and emotional health.
Thank you. Yep.
But very broad this year. Okay. If there's no further thoughts on that, yeah, Stonewall. Stonewall, Mark, is when I was talking to Mark earlier today and I was trying to come up with the agency in the Castro, it was Stonewall, the one I couldn't remember. So the other big piece of business we have to accomplish here is, as you'll remember, we haven't decided on a secondary COLA population. We have this vague idea that we want to focus it on substance use, specifically maybe something around overdose, because overdose has been such has seen such an increase in the past year. In speaking to our HRSA case officer, he was very excited about this idea, although I'm still not exactly sure how we enact this, because it has the potential to be very triggering for people in a sort of outreach standpoint. And I think that we'd have to really tread carefully on who we seek to. I mean, I'm sure somebody like Paul Harkin could help us, guide us towards a population. And again, because this is a COLA, this can be a mixed serostatus population. This does not have to be straight up HIV. I guess what I'm looking for you guys, and we sort of have been holding back on making the final call until Laura was available, but she has not been available for a couple months. So we really do need to get the ball rolling on this from an organizational and outreach standpoint. So I need sort of an affirmative sort of move forward with this focus population from you guys. Today. Sorry.
All right, I was trying to find the notes from the last meeting. This is anybody with experience with overdose?
What do you want it to be? I think that's a reasonable, and that could be having survived overdose, or having used Narcan on a partner or somebody in the community. I think those are two potential things. But I also feel like, could it be broader? That's gonna be potentially a challenging population to manage. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I think I would actually prefer to hear Laura's opinion, only because I think Laura would have a better understanding of the research landscape, or the assessment landscape that's been happening locally, because I know that there's been a lot of attention recently, and I wonder if a lot of other collaborators have been doing assessments or community assessments. I know at the foundation in particular, we're going to be launching a new assessment soon for monolingual Spanish speaking clients who have experience with overdoses. I think that's how fine tuned or how focused we're going. And it's a pretty well resourced community assessment. So I would want us to see what's happening first before we decide on something that ends up duplicating efforts.
I think if I can jump in, I can't really speak to whether it should be targeting folks who actually experienced personally overdosing, or if they witnessed it, or part of their community. But I was having a good conversation with Melina, and I'm hoping that she can share her thoughts on this as well. But as far as any kind of anxieties around triggering, which I think are always going to be there, one of the ways that in some ways the pandemic does help us with its focus on non-in-person meetings is the idea of these being, personal one-on-one, maybe much more qualitative based conversations. And so not just anonymity, but kind of a almost like a shanty style safe space is created. Melina, did you have something to add to that from our conversation?
I agree that it seems like maybe a one-on-one space could be better or less triggering. And I think that could be an option. There are also, I think, Mark, we had talked about also, and maybe Dave, doing this more geared towards service providers also.
Oh yeah.
Which could be a way of making it so that we weren't really putting people on the spot who maybe had been through a pretty traumatic experience. And so I think, yeah, also it would be helpful to talk to either Laura or Paul, or I feel like we must have a bunch of other connections too that we could ask service providers directly who are working with people who have either witnessed or experienced overdoses, whether they think one-on-one conversations could be good, or just service providers, or potentially a mix of both, but I don't know if we could do that for the COLA.
David, what you mentioned about Narcan and this whole topic, like if you bring in the service providers and then they could maybe put feelers out to their people if they'd like to talk about this, I think a private one-on-one is better. You know, there is a lot that goes with this. Just real quickly for the group, I had to retest for COVID last week. After I waited 8 days, I was part of a overdose reversal in the Tenderloin a couple of weeks ago, 7:30 in the morning, and the guy was out of it. He was dying. And, you know, because I'm unmasked going to one of my commitments, I was unmasked. So he didn't respond to three separate Narcan blasts to the nose, 3 minutes apiece, apart from each other. I had no neck pulse. And so I gave him mouth to mouth. And he ended up coughing and coming to, and my heart beats just thinking about it right now. And I have trouble saying I saved him, but like, that's kind of what happened. And I tripped on it for like a week. And then as soon as he was transported alive and breathing, I got in my head, I was like, wow, we haven't wanted to touch doorknobs for 18 months. And I was just deep in someone's mouth. So like, I was kind of tripping for like 7 days. I retested at Maxine Hall and it came back negative, but there's a lot that's going on the street right now. And I'm doing needle exchanges. Narcan is the word on everyone's tongue out there right now. Providers, users, distributors, everyone. So if you could maybe fit that in to people's experiences, that's just what I'd like to share from the group. Like I said, my heart's beating right now, just remembering about it. It happened so fast. I would do it again, but you know, masked this time, they reminded me, but there's a lot happening out there.
I mean, I think that's what you did was to be applauded, and sometimes you have to prioritize a life or death situation like that. And I think that not everyone would do that, Richard. So congratulations. I mean, I can't say how much I admire you for stepping up like that. So. So how about this?
I just want to mention there's like three people with hands up. Just wanted to.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Yes. I don't know. Lee, Derek.
I'll go ahead. Go. I know that telehealth, almost all therapy moved online, right? And I am an intern at the Liberation Institute. And I've got clients that are HIV positive. You know, they're all over the place. But to focus on, you know, a specific population like a drug overdose, Stomal is probably going to be your absolute best bet. But like I said, all therapy moved online, so it's just a matter of reaching out to organizations that are kind of tailoring towards recovery, I think.
Okay, Derek?
Sure, thanks. You know what, as we were having the discussion, I was thinking that, you know, we have an entire DPH department, the Center for Substance Use and Health, with Dr. Coffin and Dr. Matheson, who has a bunch of research and does a lot of research and are well connected to different resources out in the community and across the Bay Area doing this work. And so it would be really great to get in to get in touch with as well and to partner with in regards to this work. And if you like, I can provide their information to you. But I also am kind of, you know, I was kind of intrigued at the idea of talking with providers in regards to the folks that they work with I forget the term for it now, but a proxy for talking to folks directly. though there's nothing like talking to folks directly about their experience, in my head at least. So however we can make that possible would really work for me. I also kind of think of, there's a number of shelters like Door that might be great to connect with in terms of meeting people right where they're at getting some groups and individuals from there.
So two things in sort of what I'm thinking about after hearing kind of all of those different pieces of input, especially what Ben had to say about not being duplicative in our efforts. So working backwards, yes, I think please do send us that contact information, Derek. Although I will say, as far as like how we have to be relatively narrow in our approach, because we just don't have the, as Ben was saying, there are lots of different agencies that work specifically or have a substance use focus, and there's a city agency in and of itself that has a substance use focus. We have three staff people who are doing a number of other things. And so I think it's important. So if we're going to do this, it has to be relatively narrow and focus around the substance use piece. But also I think that it's important to think about how this needs assessment or COLA activities with the council are distinct from what a service provider or a city government agency is doing in their assessment of what the substance use population looks like. And ours is about federal funding and service utilization. And so I think we have to keep our focus on how we keep that as a central idea in addressing this population. And so in that situation, I agree that maybe what Melina was saying is somewhat reasonable. Is we don't generally consider our COLA targets as service providers, but when talking about community, I always include service providers in the community. My definition of community, as far as the council goes, is members of government, service providers, and consumers of services. You're part of one community who are all working towards a common goal. So why wouldn't we maybe branch out, especially in a year that's going to be kind of an asterisk year anyways, to do something innovative and different? So maybe we put something together that is specifically geared towards looking at service providers and how they perceive people who are using substances and their service utilization. And maybe we look to sort of hit a couple different agencies. And assess sort of where they feel like system-wide, funding-wise, structure-wise, service providers feel like there are gaps or things that maybe need to be overlooked. How do we feel about that as a strategy?
I wonder if that's like Harm Reduction Coalition territory in terms of maybe they have existing work on that already.
I agree that potentially they do, but they're not a sort of funding stream oriented. Like we're looking at sort of the way the system works in as it relates to how programs are prioritized and funded federally and within the sort of. And also within that spectrum of like, we do fund a lot of things through city general funds and that puzzle that we are constantly sort of being mindful of. I think that starting with the Harm Reduction Coalition is probably a good place to reach out to as sort of a resource to see like, let's have a conversation. Let's start with a sort of a sort of roughly sketched out idea and move forward from there and maybe interview a provider or an administrator or somebody from like three or four different agencies that specifically work with substance use. So maybe Stonewall, maybe harm reduction. Where else do we think? Somebody from the agency that Derek mentioned that I super just completely forgot the proper name for.
It's the research unit, substance use and health at the SFDPH.
And I just want to point out there's additional comments in the chat.
Sorry, I don't.
Yes.
St. James.
Glide.
Drug users.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of heads on Glide. The interesting that I'll say about some of this is the feedback I'm getting from my clients in recovery is that a lot of them stopped doing online therapy or online group support because they really missed in-person, you know, groups, right? And from what I understand from other providers as well, that there was a real decrease and a drop off in the number of sessions that were held and the attendance for those sessions, because people just weren't into it. And there might be an interesting correlation between that and increased overdoses that have been happening across the city. I mean, there's all kinds of factors that are contributing to this, of course, but this could possibly be one of them where a tangible support network is just not there anymore.
And I think that that's a totally, that perspective, that thought is something that should definitely inform our sort of interview guide. We'll call it an interview guide. That's generally what I work from when in doing one-on-ones with clients, is I have a sort of a starting point, some bullet points that I feel like I need to cover. And I do think that that's one of the major questions we should be mindful of is, you know, what do you perceive as the cause? Do you think it is a, you know, what? Because there's been a distinct increase. I'm sure all of them have thoughts on what that cause is. And do you think it has to do with, because sometimes those the causality thing is unexpected. And truthfully, in doing these, that's always what we're looking for, is that sort of unexpected causality, that sort of aberrant piece of data that points us in a direction that we can potentially utilize, that we can apply funding to address something. So I think that's a great idea to move forward with. This is definitely going outside of our standard operating procedure. Yeah, for sure. Juba should be a resource. Unfortunately, not here today. But I think we're stepping outside of our sort of standing operating procedure. I guess, and I have to leave soon. But I wanted to before I step away, I wanted to get a sense of are you good with this as a broad strokes strategy, doing a provider focus as opposed to a consumer focus.
Yeah, I think that's good. And I like the idea of starting with Harm Reduction Coalition as a start.
Yeah, I think it's good. I like the idea too. And if you're able somehow to get some commentary, you know, anecdotal evidence from consumers, just to throw in there, might be helpful to give a complete picture.
Yeah,
and Richard has his hand up.
Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, like someone said, the providers, and then if you can get some commentary from consumers. I was part of the Hopwa program at the Kinney Hotel. I left there a while ago, but there's a lot going on there too. And that would be an excellent, I don't like to use the word fishing grounds, but there's a lot of clients there. We have HIV people there, prior incarceration, active users, people in recovery. There's, unfortunately, when I was there, there were two overdose deaths. I mean, it's exactly kind of what we're looking to talk to. That would be a good area to look in. LSS runs that. JP Soto, Brian Ware's on top of the program. That would be interesting if you could pull them on board. And clients are always interested when a flyer goes up in the kitchen, offering incentive for surveys, they usually show up.
Boy, do I know it. So we have mined the Kinney for extensively for participants over the years. I mean, Richard, I'm going to go ahead and say that's how we found you. You're here because of our needs assessment or COLA activities related to the Kinney, if I remember correctly. So we are aware. I will also point out that both, so the COLA is going to be focused largely on LSS services and the sort of the housing related COLA this year is going to be focused largely on LSS related services. And there is a substance use component in that survey. So we are going to be getting information from that cohort of consumers. Additionally, the needs assessment, which is going to be a much more broad spectrum, always includes a fairly significant amount of focus on substance use, because we know that is one of those sort of three or four elements that most informs how people stay, whether they do or do not stay engaged in care. So I do think we'll have some data that we can cross-reference across the three different pieces. So I'm not concerned that we're not going to hear enough from consumers around that necessarily.
Just a quick sort of technical question. Melina, I think you're in charge of this recording, and usually recordings have a record of chat, right? If so, could you just forward that the chat record to like Dave and me and yourself, so that we have all of these awesome suggestions sort of in a place without poor Kira having to actually type every single one of them. This might be easier. Thank you.
All right, did we do the thing? Are we good?
Go for it.
Okay, I think we feel like we have our marching orders. We'll start moving forward with that sort of concurrently with the one we have going on, but likely that will take place after,
I guess to make it official, you might as well ask Richard, is there any objections to this decision so it can be, you know, done in a process forward way?
Yeah, everyone just heard what's going on. Are there any objections to what we just heard going forward with this? I'm glad I thought of that.
I like Nay's thumbs up.
Yeah. Okay, so like David said, marching orders. Thanks for everyone's involvement in that, and we'll go forward from there. So it looks like, yes.
Sorry, quick question. For the minutes, does it need to be a moved and seconded, or is it more, yeah.
So sorry, I really should have mentioned that. So someone will have to move and someone will have to second. And then Richard, you'll just have to repeat what you just asked everyone.
Okay, yeah, I felt a little despotic there, but it was comfortable, so I went with it.
It felt natural to me.
So moved from Lee Jewell.
So are there any, how would I phrase this? Any objections?
One second, slow okay. The Richard roll. So yeah. Lee Jewell moved. Is there a second to this motion to have this a service provider focused COLA? Looks like Ben put up some deuces. That would be a second. And now you go, Richard.
Okay, so the motion is passed, correct?
You just asked, are there any objections to this motion?
Any objections to this motion as just presented and seconded? No objections being noted. The motion is passed.
Cool.
Thank you, everyone.
So, Melina, I made you host because I have to get out of here. Although there's not really much left on the agenda to discuss, but thanks, everyone. And Beth, I assume this is your last meeting with us. You're leaving to go to Aries team soon, right?
Oh, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just also going to be on the Aries team.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Also, I'm not officially here. I've never been officially here. So
yeah, but you're here as our HHS sort of
hanger on, yeah.
Advisor. You provide us with a significant amount of good information. So
Beth is in demand everywhere.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no. Nothing else is changing, just adding more airy stuff.
Okay, cool. Bye everyone.
Bye.
Thank you, David. So it looks like we would move on now to a discussion on, once again, the virtual blended versus in-person meetings.
I actually have one more update on the COLA. Just really brief for the other one around the shelter in place. We got the gift card. So now I've been in touch with JP, so I'm going to talk to him about getting clients. And I think since just with everything with the Delta, we're not going to do anything in person. So I think we're going to do it with just sending people the quantitative shorter part of the survey and then doing individual phone calls. And I'm also asking JP if he thinks it would be better to just do it all over the phone, depending on how much support folks would need with filling out an online survey, but also balancing not making the phone call like overwhelmingly long. But that's where we are with that. So I think that we'll have some movement on that soon. And then for the other COLA, I will plan on reaching out to, it sounds like I'll start with the people that Derek sent, Tim, Philip, and John Farley, and start there. And also the Harm Reduction Coalition. That I just want to confirm that was the group consensus, right? For starting to reach out to people. Yeah.
Cool. I throw Juba in there too. I mean, I think your usual suspects of Juba and Paul would be, you know, why not?
Okay, cool.
I'm not sure if Laura is working directly with clients at this point, but I do know that both Paul and Juba do.
Okay, that sounds good. Maybe in that case, I'll start out first with council members just because of the direct link and then move to the other person that Derek sent. So thank you, everyone.
All right, thank you, Melina. So are we going to have a discussion on virtual blended versus in-person meetings?
I can do an update if you'd like.
Yeah, please.
This is actually coming from more of a Shanti perspective at this point, and it's all about the Delta variant, which is right now we are really just putting on hold any kinds of in-person. I don't know if you all know, the other part of my job is volunteer services. It's together a department I oversee. Community-based stuff. And so we're putting on hold any of our plans around in-person activities that we actually had for August and September. And I'm gonna have to do the same with the council. The council certainly hasn't provided a recommendation that we start on a particular date, but it seems in some ways like, why spend time discussing what a timeline could be while variables are still out there? And so if the group is okay, I'd just like to put this conversation on hold until we find out more. You know, as I mentioned sort of to my staff, if you all have followed what's happened in other countries, a lot of times the Delta variant has really surged and then gone, like kind of burned out. That might happen with us. So this might be a sooner rather than later thing, but at the very least, statistically, it's been like a couple months where it's dominated countries. And so it just seems in some ways like pointless to start talking about blended, let alone in-person meetings while we're all wrestling with this new norm.
Yeah, my feelings exactly, Mark. I just saw it on the agenda. I thought I'd bring it up, but yeah, That's exactly where it stands.
And I think like Ben suggested, let's just revisit in September. We could even pull off we could even keep it on the agenda, even if it's the same kind of message I'm providing, which is we haven't decided yet. The steering committee did determine, actually basically leadership did determine that we're not going to be having an in-person summit in September. And so I certainly don't see any kind of blended or in-person things happening over the next couple months.
Makes perfect sense. Thanks for the updates, Mark. That's perfect sense. So with that, unless anyone has anything further, looks like our next online meeting for this committee will be September 1st via Zoom. Everyone good with that? Everyone good with me?
You good.
All right, everyone, enjoy the rest of your summer. It was great to see everyone and stay safe.
See you next month, guys.
Bye, everyone.
And good on you again, Richard, for what you did. That was incredible.
Blessing.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Cool.